From national news in D.C. to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol, this is your Capitol Connection. And now, bringing the Capitol to you, here's your host, Nate Groz.
And welcome to Capitol Connection, where we are bringing the Capitol to you every week from the Nebraska Family Alliance Studio in Lincoln, covering the issues that matter most, family, freedom, and life. We've got some great news and important updates to share on today's program. American pastor Andrew Brunson has been freed from prison in Turkey, where he was being held on charges of terrorism. He is back safe in the United States. The pro-life Gosnell movie opened across the country this past week, and although it has faced a media blackout, it is defying odds at the box office. We'll talk about why, plus two huge victories for religious freedom that should be celebrated across the country. The big news for religious freedom last week was the safe return of Pastor Andrew Brunson, a pastor and Christian missionary who had been preaching the gospel in Turkey until he was wrongfully arrested and held captive on charges of terrorism, completely bogus claims, and he was being held prisoner for 18 months. And there were so many people across the country who had been praying for Pastor Brunson and his family, and the Trump administration took the whole ordeal very seriously and fought for his relief. So we are celebrating and praising God this week that Pastor Brunson is safe. He is back with his family in the United States. And this is a story that could have turned out much differently. For so long, it looked like he might not ever be able to return to the United States, and we didn't know what his fate would be. He had lost so many different appeals, and the whole process really appeared to be a sham. And we know that he was being held for being a Christian and for preaching the gospel. But thankfully, due to the tireless work of so many people advocating and fighting for Pastor Brunson and his family, and the prayers of thousands of people across the country and across the globe, he has been released and is safe. And actually, upon his return, got to go to the White House, where he and his wife said a blessing and a prayer over the president and members of his cabinet. It was beautiful, incredibly touching. And I wanted to share remarks and answers to questions that Pastor Brunson gave speaking to Sean Hannity last week on Fox News. And in this clip, you'll get to hear what it was like for Pastor Brunson, what he experienced, but also some really powerful and beautiful testimony on suffering and how Pastor Brunson was able to rely on his faith and put his trust in God and remain a witness for Christ to the other prisoners despite facing this persecution. And you'll also get to hear a clip at the beginning of Pastor Brunson praying over the president. It was an incredible moment. Take a listen.
Now, according to news reports, Pastor Brunson is the 19th prisoner, perhaps hostage is the right word, freed by the Trump administration. Here's Pastor Brunson praying with the president at the White House over the weekend. Take a look.
Lord God, I ask that you pour out your Holy Spirit on President Trump, that you give him supernatural wisdom to accomplish all the plans you have for this country and for him. I ask that you give him wisdom and how to lead this country into righteousness.
Joining us now is Pastor Brunson himself. Pastor, I'm so glad you're out. I know how many worked on your behalf, talked about your case often, Jay Sekulow, the president. You were held for 18 months and had no reason, no understanding why. And you were held in a cell designed for eight, and there were 21 people, correct?
Yes, for part of that time, it was a very crowded cell, and part of the time I was also in isolation, so it was a very difficult time. And I was surprised because I had never really considered prison as a possibility and counted the cost for that.
Yeah. How were you treated, sir?
I was treated well by the prisoners I was with.
And they were not of your faith?
They weren't, and that was one of the very difficult things. Is it? I was isolated by culture and by language, but especially by religion, and it was very difficult to be the only Christian among them.
When you found out what you were being held for, which was your faith, what did you think?
Well, what was surprising is that they told me that I was being held for terrorism and for trying to overthrow the government. And the truth is that we had been preaching Jesus Christ there. That's why we were in Turkey for 23 years up until that time, is to share the gospel of Jesus Christ with Turks. We've done that openly and never had a problem. So yeah. It was very shocking to be accused of terrorism.
Yeah, well, and also, but it really came down to your Christian faith in many ways, which is, and I thought your prayer was extraordinarily touching with the president. I want to talk, what was your worst moment? Because I can imagine that when you lose your freedom, you pretty much lose everything, especially in a foreign country, not knowing why you're even being held, and, you know, not having anyone to share your faith, your values with you. When was your lowest moment?
Well, when I was arrested and it kept going on, and it seemed that there was no way out, and I lost a lot of hope. And what helped me, I began to see that there was value in my suffering, especially as time went on. I saw that many people around the world began praying for me, and I began to see that God was involved in this.
How did you find out about that? How did you hear about that?
Well, this was especially through my wife, because she was the only contact I really had with the outside world. And she could visit me for about half an hour every week through a glass and speaking on the phone. And she would bring encouragement to me and tell me that people were praying for me. And as I learned that, I began to see that God was involved in this and that God was going to do something with my suffering that had
value.
Why
did you say this morning in an interview, I'm one of the most hated men in Turkey, probably?
Well, I've been accused of trying to overthrow the government, of being a... aligned with the Fethullah Gulen terrorist movement, also being part of the PKK, which is a Kurdish guerrilla terror movement. And also I was blamed for the economic problems Turkey had. So there probably are not too many people who like me there right now.
Pastor, let's talk about that moment that touched a lot of people. You're a man of great faith and obviously a strong Christian, and you prayed for the president. Let's talk about that moment.
Well, it's something that we had hoped to be able to do. My wife had for some time wanted to pray some verses over him from Isaiah, just asking for the Spirit of God to come upon him. And before we went to meet him, when we learned we would be able to visit him in the White House, we prayed together, my wife and I, and asked God to give us that opportunity to pray for the president. And it's a great privilege. I think many pastors would love to do it. And our president needs prayer.
This is such an inspiring story. Pastor Brunson is a hero of the faith, and we are so thankful to have the conclusion for him and his family to this ordeal and his safe return to the United States. And as you just heard Pastor Brunson mention at the end of that clip, our president needs prayer. It was incredible to get to hear the prayer that he shared and prayed over the president. And at Nebraska Family Alliance, we are inviting everyone to join us in praying each day leading up to the November election. It's a special election prayer guide with a very short, specific prayer point each day. You can find it right on our website at NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org, and we hope that you will join us in praying for our state and for our nation. And if you haven't done so already, go see the movie Gosnell, which opened across the country last weekend. This is the pro-life film detailing the horrific accounts and the criminal trial of late-term Philadelphia abortion doctor Kermit Gosnell. And despite facing a media blackout both before the movie was released and since its release last weekend, it is performing much better than critics expected. And this is a really important film for a couple of reasons. I went and saw it last weekend. It is shocking. It is powerful, but it's all true. And it shines a light on the abortion industry in a way that most people have never seen or considered or thought about. But it does it in a way that isn't over the top or in your face. It just gives you the facts of what happened in this case, which again is about Kermit Gosnell, who was convicted of murder following a two-month trial back in 2013 and is currently serving a life sentence in prison with no possibility of parole. He was an abortion doctor based in Philadelphia, where state law prohibits the procedure of an abortion beginning at 24 weeks gestational age. But by his own admission, Dr. Gosnell regularly performed illegal late-term abortions, mostly on low-income and minority women. And in some cases, he would induce labor, deliver live babies, and then kill them by snipping the backs of their necks. And this was all uncovered by what started out as a drug raid on the Gosnell Clinic, which ultimately revealed a house of horrors, including toilets clogged with fetal remains, cupboards containing jars with the severed feet of infants, refrigerators and freezers stuffed with more discarded fetuses that were being stored in milk cartons and water jugs. And authorities even discovered that Dr. Gosnell employed assistants who had no medical training and were paid under the table to sedate the patients, conduct ultrasounds, and even administer labor-inducing drugs, which led to the death of one of his patients. And he had been running this clinic this way for decades. Shocking, grotesque, completely abhorrent. So you would think that when this story broke and when a movie was made about it, that the media would cover it, but they didn't, and they don't want to, because it paints a picture of abortion that they don't want people to see, or they themselves don't want to have to look at or ask themselves the difficult questions. Kermit Gosnell did it in the most horrible, evil ways imaginable. But the end result of every abortion is the same: the death of a unborn, fully human child. And this film is changing the way people look at this issue and how it's talked about as being about choice and empowerment. And if you are against abortion, that you are anti-women. So I'm glad that this story is being told. And again, please go see the film if you have the opportunity. And to give you a little bit better understanding of why this film is so important and the type of reception that it's been receiving, I want to play a short clip of one of the filmmakers of the Gosnell film, Phelim McAleer, who spoke with Martha McCollum on The Story last week, talking about the reception to the film and why they believe that the mainstream media is refusing to cover this story.
When you see the facts of this case, it shakes. We showed it to a liberal friend, or a movie to a liberal friend. He went outside, started chain smoking, and said, "I have to rethink everything." And this is what this film does. Now, the film is PG-13, so we don't show any of the gore. It's not a horror show, but it's a factual, you know, Law and Order style film. Yeah. That really raises a lot of questions.
Yeah, and that's how the investigation began, because as we saw in the trailer, it was part of a drug bust. So they stumbled on this murder factory, as you point out. But the fascinating thing is that they went into the courtroom to begin the case, the attorneys were told, "You're going to be mobbed by reporters. This is going to be intense, yeah. And you better be ready."
Yeah.
No reporters showed up except you guys, right?
Yeah, I was in the courtroom. I saw them. I've been a journalist for 25 years, saw the most shocking evidence, pictures, all the terrible stuff. Gosnell sitting feet away from me. Behind me was the most shocking thing, row after row after row of empty seats. The prosecution hired the biggest courtroom in Philadelphia because they thought they were going to be mobbed. Media didn't turn up. Nobody wants to do anything that will cast a negative light on abortion. This film was in the top 10 over the weekend. It's had two reviews in the mainstream media. Broken Boy, which is a film no one's really heard of, had 70 reviews. Venom had 280. This is the film that the mainstream media don't want to cover, this topic, and, you know, because they don't want to write anything negative about abortion.
Do you think it will change minds?
That's what people are saying on Twitter. People should look at what people are saying on Twitter. It changed my mind, actually. I was neutral on abortion before this. Well, once I started studying it, yeah. I realized Planned Parenthood are geniuses. They had me in the dark about abortion.
This is what the pro-life movement is up against. And despite the media's best attempts to ignore this movie, after the opening weekend, the film has emerged as the number one indie film in the United States and cracked the top 10 among all box office offerings, as you just heard. The Los Angeles Times and Forbes were the only two news organizations to recognize the film, and this was a film that was financed entirely through an unprecedented crowdfunding campaign that raised $2.3 million from more than 30,000 donors in just 45 days to produce this film. So it's really important to support this film and efforts like this. So if you haven't seen this movie yet, please go see it. And if you already have, go again and take a friend. We need to keep telling people the truth about abortion and life inside the womb. And this is a great opportunity to do that. And while the media won't cover this pro-life film because they don't have to, the city of Atlanta will now have to pay former fire chief Kelvin Cochran a $1.2 million settlement over his firing after writing a Christian devotional book for men expressing biblical views on marriage. And this is a victory for religious freedom in America. What happened to Chief Cochran was one of the most egregious religious freedom violations that you could think of. And to see him not only stand up and fight for his own religious freedom and the freedom of all Americans, but to be vindicated is huge. Kelvin Cochran was probably one of, if not the most successful and distinguished firefighters in the entire country. He was the head fire chief for the city of Atlanta and was even appointed to be United States Fire Administrator by President Obama, which is the highest position in the firefighting profession. And despite all of that, he was fired by the city of Atlanta solely because on his own time and with his own money, he wrote a Christian devotional book for men in which he briefly expressed biblical views and beliefs on traditional marriage and human sexuality. And because of that, he was fired. This all started back in 2013, and now the city of Atlanta has agreed and approved a $1.2 million settlement to Chief Cochran. And Chief Cochran is someone, he is a hero of mine. If you listen to him speak, if you see the things that he has overcome in his own life to be successful, this is someone who was born into severe poverty and overcame discrimination to become one of the most successful and distinguished firefighters in the entire country. And he did it all the right way, by the books, worked hard, believed in God, and lost it all, his childhood dream and life's work, because of his Christian faith. But he has been vindicated, and with it, religious freedom once again upheld. You don't have to check your beliefs and your faith out the door when you walk out for the job in the morning. Religious freedom is not confined to the four walls of a church or inside your home. You have the right to live and work according to your deeply held beliefs 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And in such a diverse and pluralistic society, tolerance has to remain a two-way street. The government can't discriminate against you because they don't like your beliefs. This is what we're working towards at Nebraska Family Alliance, and we are privileged and very proud to actually be bringing Chief Kelvin Cochran to Nebraska for NFA's 30th anniversary gala, where you will have the opportunity to hear his story, meet him personally, and be inspired and encouraged by his faith. It's going to be an incredible evening on October 26th in Lincoln, and we wanted to give you all a sneak peek of what you can expect that evening by giving you a little preview of what Chief Cochran will be sharing with us that evening. Our executive director, Karen Bowling, had the opportunity to interview Chief Cochran earlier this week, and we want to share part of that conversation with you today. Take a listen.
Tell you, being born in poverty in the early 60s in Shreveport, Louisiana, created many, many challenges. But it was in those days that my mother, who raised six children all by herself, took us to a church at the top of an alley that we lived, and we joined church. And from that time, I began to remember many, many things about growing up as a little kid. And of course, the horrors of poverty was one of the things that stuck out in my mind. My mother having to raise six children all by herself without our father being in the home was very difficult. And I saw men at my church that were married, guys who had wives and children. So I wanted to be like them, and I wanted the family. And then in that very same alley, one Sunday after church, a lady's house caught fire across the street from where we lived. when I saw those firefighters that day, I was smitten. And all I wanted to be from that moment on was a firefighter.
And God answered that desire in your heart, and you became a firefighter. What were your first experiences being a firefighter?
Well, when I became firefighter in Shreveport, Louisiana in 1981, my childhood dream came true, but it was very difficult times because I was one of the first African Americans on the Shreveport Fire Department. And of course, the fire service in those days was predominantly white males, and historically predominantly white males, and African Americans or nor women were desired or appreciated. And so when we came into the department, it was very difficult. I had constant slate of racial slurs. There was a designated bed for the black firefighter, and some fire stations had separate plates and spoons and forks, and one captain in particular, I was allowed to eat from the dishes, but he made me wash the dishes in nearly scalding hot water. And it was very difficult times, but there were some things that I was taught growing up as a kid that I applied when I became a firefighter. As a kid, I was taught that all your dreams will come true if you believe in God, go to school and get a good education, respect grown-ups, and treat other people like you want to be treated. They said all your dreams would come true. So when I became a firefighter, I continued to apply those values. I continued to grow in my faith in God. I continued to go to school and get a good education. I respected the authority of the Shreveport Fire Department. And in spite of how I was being treated by the other firefighters, I treated the other firefighters like I wanted to be treated. And by the grace of God, I overcame even those racial difficulties as a new firefighter in Shreveport.
It's a beautiful journey that God has taken you on. After your years of service, in fact, you, in your profession, you reached the U.S. Fire Administrator. That is the highest honor in your profession, and eventually you returned to work for the city of Atlanta as their fire chief. But what happened after you returned to Atlanta?
Well, the path of the journey that led me to becoming the United States Fire Administrator, Karen, was a journey of mountain climbs, level plains, and valleys. It was just a continuum throughout my career, and that led me to become the United States Fire Administrator, and many blessings and honors along the way, which actually caused me to rise to the level of credibility that would caused me to be selected by President Obama to serve at that level. But it was that same national notoriety and credibility that caused the new mayor of Atlanta to come to Washington, D.C., and to recruit me to come back to serve as the fire chief in Atlanta for the second time. And so I had lived out my faith my entire life through faith and patriotism. And so I just did not change that when I returned back to Atlanta. I was living out my faith, serving at my church as a deacon and a small group teacher, and God put it on my heart to write a book that deal with Christian men who struggle with condemnation. And the title of the book is Who Told You That You Were Naked? And I always say that if people don't connect that question with Genesis chapter 3, verse 11, they probably draw the conclusion, no wonder he got fired for a title like that. That's a little humor. So I have to make sure that people understand that title is Genesis chapter 3, verse 11. But the theme of it is Christian men overcoming the stronghold of condemnation. And so in the book, I talked about biblical marriage and biblical sexuality in only about four paragraphs of a 162-page book. And it was what I said about biblical marriage and biblical sexuality that ultimately caused my childhood dream come true to come to an end.
Well, I know that you have had quite the journey, and you continue on that journey. What all of us at Nebraska would like to tell you is we salute you, sir, Because of your courage to stand for your deeply held beliefs, you believe that every American should have the right to live their faith in the public square. And we are so excited, Kelvin, that you're going to be joining us Friday, October 26th for a celebration. Actually, NFA will be celebrating our 30th birthday, but we're going to be celebrating everyday heroes like you, men and women across our state and nation, who stand for their faith in the public square. So, Kelvin, are you excited to come to Nebraska?
I am so excited and looking forward, especially after what you just shared. You have me even more fired up than I was before we started this conversation. So,
well, I can't wait. October 26th, coming up this Friday, NFA's 30th anniversary gala with Chief Kelvin Cochran. We hope that you will join us. This is your last opportunity to buy tickets this week. You can find them at our website, NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. That's all the time we have for this week. I'm your host, Nate Graz, Policy Director at Nebraska Family Alliance. Hoping you'll join us again next week. Thanks for listening to your Capital Connection.